Theodore Kaczynski's anti-tech revolution arrives like a time bomb in our digital age. Published while the author serves multiple life sentences for his notorious mail bombing campaign, the book has developed a cult following among both environmental activists and technology skeptics. What makes this work particularly unsettling is not just its author's violent history, but how prescient many of his warnings about technological society have proven to be. Silicon Valley executives, including former Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey, have acknowledged the uncomfortable accuracy of Kaczynski's technological critique, even while condemning his methods. As artificial intelligence and climate change increasingly dominate headlines, this philosophical manifesto has gained renewed relevance for those questioning whether our technological civilization is sustainable or even desirable. The central premise of Kaczynski's argument is that human societies, especially technologically advanced ones, are complex systems whose development can never rationally be controlled. While short-term prediction and limited control may be possible in specific contexts, the long-term effects of technological interventions remain fundamentally unpredictable. Consider historical examples like the Green Revolution. While it succeeded in dramatically increasing agricultural yields, it also brought devastating environmental consequences. In Punjab, India, farmers who initially celebrated their increased productivity now lament that it ruined our soil, our environment, our water table, and transformed village gatherings from festive celebrations into medical center visits. Similarly, the Atoms for Peace program, established in 1957 to promote peaceful nuclear energy, failed spectacularly in its goal of preventing nuclear proliferation while creating the unsolved problem of radioactive waste. The reason for these failures lies in the mathematical properties of complex systems. Calculating rational outcomes for even a single national economy would require manipulating approximately 60 trillion simultaneous equations, and that's before accounting for countless psychological and sociological factors. Even with unimaginable computing power, the butterfly effect makes prediction futile. Tiny data inaccuracies invalidate predictions about complex systems. For chaotic systems, each small extension of predictive range requires exponentially greater precision in initial data. This isn't merely theoretical. When we introduce new technologies, we trigger cascading interactions that defy prediction. Even Moore's Law, which has accurately predicted computing power growth for 50 years, is merely an observed trend with unknown duration and unpredictable societal consequences. The uncomfortable truth is that we are piloting our technological civilization with extremely limited visibility into where we're actually headed. What's most striking about this analysis is how it contradicts the confident predictions of both technology enthusiasts and environmental activists. Both groups assume levels of control over societal development that simply don't exist. As Kaczynski pointedly asks, if we can't even predict the weather accurately beyond a few days, how can we possibly predict, let alone control, the vastly more complex interactions of technology, society, and environment? Natural selection operates within complex societies, generating self-preserving systems that compete relentlessly for power. These systems, from corporations to political movements to corruption networks, evolve to invade every possible niche and circumvent attempts to suppress them. Like biological organisms adapting to environments, they struggle for survival by accumulating power, regardless of any government's attempts to steer society. What makes this process particularly dangerous is that natural selection favors systems pursuing short-term advantage regardless of long-term consequences. Organizations that prioritize immediate power over environmental concerns gain competitive advantage. While environmental advocates might hope public pressure could counter this process, powerful organizations have developed sophisticated tools to manipulate public opinion, create dependency on their products, emphasize job creation through growth, and stoke nationalist fears. The current extinction event differs fundamentally from all previous mass extinctions. While past extinctions resulted from one or few blind forces, like the asteroid that killed the dinosaurs, today's extinction stems from countless intelligent, self-propagating systems relentlessly pursuing short-term advantage without concern for consequences. Like biological organisms that exploit every possible niche, these human organizations leave no resource untapped, no avenue unexplored in their drive for power. Mining operations extract previously worthless elements like rare earths and uranium, poisoning waterways forever with toxic waste. Petroleum extraction penetrates ever deeper with techniques like fracking, devastating landscapes and communities. Nuclear power generates unmanageable radioactive waste, while even green energy sources prove destructive. Wind farms kill raptors, solar installations destroy desert habitats. The technological system's appetite for energy is insatiable, and we must anticipate not just current harmful trends, but entirely new, currently unimaginable assaults on our environment that will accelerate at an ever-increasing pace. What makes this analysis particularly chilling is its inevitability. It's not that humans are inherently evil or that particular political systems are to blame. It's that the competitive dynamics of technological systems themselves drive this destruction. As communication technology has become global, these competitive systems now span the entire planet, with no geographical limits to their expansion and resource consumption. The result is a technological system that will inevitably push Earth's conditions beyond survivable limits. The fantasies of technology enthusiasts about immortality and technological utopia reveal profound self-deception. When humans become useless to the technological system, self-propagating systems will eliminate them, if not abruptly, then gradually, to minimize rebellion risk. As machines surpass humans in specialized intelligence needed for technical decisions, people will become obsolete. Even man-machine hybrids will only retain human components as long as they remain useful. Eventually, human emotions like love, compassion, and desire for freedom will be purged as competitive disadvantages. The accelerating pace of technological change means the life expectancies of human-derived entities will be quite short. The 1,000-year lifespan techies aspire to is merely a pipe dream. Their belief system functions as a quasi-religious phenomenon, technionity, with all the earmarks of an apocalyptic cult, a cataclysmic event, the singularity, followed by techno-utopia, with the techies as the elect destined for eternal life. These beliefs likely reflect their anxieties about technology's future rather than genuine confidence, a religious myth created to escape their fears. What's particularly revealing is how technology enthusiasts like Ray Kurzweil and Kevin Kelly respond to concerns about technological risks. Rather than addressing the fundamental problems of complexity and unpredictability, they propose solutions that actually compound these problems, like creating superintelligent machines to manage our complex systems. This represents a profound failure of imagination, an inability to consider that the technological system itself might be inherently uncontrollable and ultimately self-destructive. For those convinced that technological society is headed toward catastrophe, what practical steps can be taken? Kaczynski argues that four fundamental postulates must guide any effective revolutionary movement. 1. Societal change requires clear, concrete goals rather than vague ones. 2. Mere advocacy of ideas cannot produce lasting behavioral changes except in small minorities. 3. Radical movements attract people with loosely related goals, potentially blurring the original mission. 4. Every powerful radical movement eventually becomes corrupt after its original leaders die or become inactive. From these postulates flow five critical rules. I. Movements must select a single, clear, simple objective that will produce the desired change. II. The objective must create irreversible consequences so society remains transformed without further effort. II, a small minority must commit to achieving the objective through means beyond mere preaching. IV, the movement must exclude unsuitable persons to prevent mission drift. IV, the objective must be achieved quickly once sufficient power is gained before corruption sets in. Historical examples support these principles. Early feminists succeeded when they shifted from vague equality goals to the single, concrete objective of women's suffrage in the 1870s. After achieving this in the 1920s, feminism splintered but continued making progress because women's voting power and the historical trend toward equality favored their cause. Similarly, the Irish independence movement succeeded only when nationalists maintained their clear goal of separation from Britain, eventually achieving it despite initially lacking popular support. By contrast, vague utopian schemes invariably fail. Cellist Glendinning's Neo-Luddite vision and Arne Naess's deep ecology both violate these principles through their diffuse objectives and lack of practical organization. Naess's vague goals like unfolding the rich potentialities of the human person and gradual decentralization lack specificity and would take generations to implement, guaranteeing corruption before completion. What makes this analysis particularly valuable is its clear-eyed assessment of how social movements actually succeed or fail. Rather than indulging in idealistic fantasies about changing human nature or achieving universal consensus, Kaczynski focuses on the practical mechanics of creating lasting social change. This approach may seem coldly strategic, but it reflects a deep understanding of historical patterns and human organizational behavior. Revolutionary movements rarely unfold according to predetermined plans. Most successful revolutionary leaders didn't follow fixed programs, but proceeded through trial and error, seizing unforeseen opportunities. Lenin himself didn't believe revolution in Russia would happen in his lifetime, yet succeeded by recognizing and exploiting the unexpected February 1917 insurrection. While waiting for major opportunities, a revolutionary movement must remain active, not only to build strength, but because an inactive movement will die as members lose interest. Activity is also necessary because revolutionaries must help create opportunities, not just wait passively. In Russia, revolutionary activity contributed to the regime's defeat in World War I, and Bolshevik indoctrination of workers provided the theoretical framework that made the spontaneous St. Petersburg insurrection effective. Revolutionary movements must maintain flexibility, not becoming rigidly committed to programs that can't be altered when unforeseen developments occur. As Mao wrote, ideas, theories, plans, or programs are usually altered partially and sometimes even wholly when they fail to correspond with reality. And revolutionary leaders must correct their approaches and ensure new programs match changing situations. True revolutionaries, the deeply committed core cadre, will accept extreme hardship and death for their cause. Not only hardcore revolutionaries, but ordinary people show extraordinary courage during social disruption or when inspired by noble purposes. Russians maintained resistance despite German atrocities in World War II. German civilians endured devastating Allied bombing. American air crews continued missions despite 75% casualty rates. Many who face extreme danger for worthy causes experience deep fulfillment, even enjoyment from their heroic activities, as evidenced by accounts from POWs, resistance fighters, and Cuban revolutionaries who later nostalgically recalled their dangerous struggles as their happiest times. Revolutionary opportunities typically arise from failures of the social order, as seen when corruption undermined the Catholic Church before the Reformation, when Napoleon's defeat weakened Spanish control of American colonies, when foreign powers humiliated China before the 1911 revolution, when military defeats undermined the Tsarist regime, and when economic depression enabled Hitler's rise. Revolutionary movements often begin as tiny, despised groups of crackpots who remain insignificant for years before finding their opportunity. Marx and Engels were mere eccentrics when they wrote the Communist Manifesto for the obscure Communist League. Irish nationalists were a minuscule minority until the 1916 uprising. What makes this strategic analysis particularly compelling is its emphasis on preparation rather than prediction. Rather than claiming to know exactly how technological society will collapse, Kaczynski focuses on building a movement capable of recognizing and exploiting opportunities when they inevitably arise. This approach acknowledges the fundamental unpredictability of complex systems while still offering a practical path forward. Revolutionary organizations require unity in action and discipline. As Castro noted, nothing useful comes from anarchic men who break away at the first disagreement. Stalin's theoretical approach, though not his practice, offers a sound model: free discussion and criticism during decision-making, followed by complete unity of action once decisions are made. While Mandela believed in democracy within the ANC, he insisted on party discipline after decisions were reached. In practice, an effective organization needs hierarchy. Many decisions must be made quickly by an executive body, and the most knowledgeable and experienced members must bear primary responsibility for decision-making. True democracy works only in small-scale societies. Large-scale organizations attempting purely democratic structures condemn themselves to impotence. Despite the importance of unity, splits in revolutionary organizations are sometimes necessary when irreconcilable disagreements arise over fundamental issues. When persistent disagreement exists with no prospect of resolution, separation often creates stronger independent unities. Lenin exemplified this approach, never fearing to be in the minority when convinced he was right. The Bolsheviks split from the Mensheviks and ultimately prevailed. A revolutionary movement requires self-confidence. Alinsky emphasized that organizers must have confidence themselves and instill it in others to overcome passivity and apathy. Trotsky noted the significance of Bolsheviks' belief in their own truth and their victory. While Castro's reference to absolute faith shouldn't be taken literally in our skeptical age, it points to a psychological state of buoyant self-confidence that enables persistence through seemingly insurmountable difficulties. While confidence in achieving the ultimate revolutionary goal is essential, overconfidence in specific operations must be avoided. Lenin habitually exaggerated risks and planned meticulously. As Trotsky said, one must be prudent to win the right to be bold. Never underestimate adversaries. It's safer to overestimate them. Mao advised that revolutionaries should strategically despise the enemy while tactically taking them seriously. The negative effects of defeats can be mitigated when revolutionaries understand that determined renewal of effort after crushing defeat often leads to victory. History demonstrates this repeatedly. King Alfred of Wessex recovered from Danish occupation to win victory in seemingly hopeless circumstances. Robert Bruce rose from hunted fugitive to King of Scotland despite initially having almost no resources. German Social Democrats rebounded from near destruction under the Socialist Law of 1878. Chinese Communists recovered from losing 90% of their revolutionary forces. What's particularly striking about this organizational analysis is how it balances seemingly contradictory principles: unity with necessary division, confidence with prudence, discipline with adaptability. This nuanced approach reflects a sophisticated understanding of how effective organizations actually function rather than idealistic notions of how they should function. A revolutionary organization in the modern era requires a dedicated committee to study and understand technology, not merely for offensive capabilities, but critically for self-protection and strategic application. Modern surveillance has evolved far beyond simple wiretapping into a complex web of interconnected systems. These include sophisticated audio surveillance capable of isolating conversations in crowded spaces, AI-powered camera networks that can track individuals across entire cities, advanced facial recognition systems that work even with partial face coverage, miniature drones that can operate in swarms for surveillance, and emerging neurological monitoring technologies that claim to detect intentions and thoughts. While many of these surveillance methods technically violate Fourth Amendment protections against unreasonable searches, prosecutions for such violations remain remarkably rare, creating a de facto acceptance of widespread surveillance. Traditional revolutionary tactics face unprecedented challenges in this technological landscape. Street demonstrations, historically a cornerstone of social movements, become increasingly vulnerable as crowd control technologies advance. Modern authorities can deploy long-range acoustic devices, LRADs, that cause immediate disorientation, high-powered strobe systems that trigger seizure-like symptoms, and heat rays that create unbearable burning sensations, all while maintaining plausible deniability about causing permanent harm. These technologies allow authorities to disperse large gatherings without the political liability of visible violence. Perhaps most significantly, the automation of military and police functions is accelerating rapidly. The development of autonomous security systems, robot sentries, and AI-driven combat units suggests that within decades, human soldiers and police officers might be largely replaced by machines. These mechanical enforcers would be immune to psychological warfare, moral appeals, or the hesitation that human officers might feel when ordered to suppress civilian protests. They would follow programming exactly, without regard for ethical considerations or human empathy. However, technology also offers new opportunities for revolutionary movements. Modern communication systems, encryption technologies, and decentralized networks create possibilities for organization and resistance that previous generations of revolutionaries could not have imagined. Future revolutionary actions will likely be characterized by technological warfare. Battles fought through infrastructure disruption, information control, and cyber operations, rather than traditional physical confrontations. Success will depend heavily on technological sophistication on both sides. This analysis breaks new ground by recognizing that technology isn't simply adding new tools to old conflicts. It's fundamentally reshaping the nature of social struggle. The traditional revolutionary playbook, focused on mass mobilization and physical confrontation, must evolve to address a world where power is increasingly exercised through technological control systems. Revolutionary movements must develop technological competency not as an adjunct skill, but as a core strategic capability. This understanding represents a significant departure from classical revolutionary theory, which primarily focused on social and economic factors while treating technology as merely instrumental. Perhaps the most chilling warning in Kaczynski's book concerns geoengineering, technological interventions to control Earth's climate. He argues that geoengineering may represent the most dangerous aspect of modern technology, potentially more dangerous than nuclear weapons. While nuclear destruction would be immediate and catastrophic, geoengineering threatens a slower but equally devastating form of collapse through systemic dependency and environmental destabilization. The dangers of geoengineering manifest in multiple interconnected ways. Even if initial interventions appear successful, catastrophic long-term consequences are inevitable for three key reasons. First, attempts to meddle with the environment inevitably produce unforeseen consequences requiring further intervention, creating a deepening cycle of problems. For example, releasing sulfur particles to cool the atmosphere might reduce global temperatures but could disrupt rainfall patterns, requiring additional interventions to manage precipitation. Each intervention creates new problems requiring more complex solutions. Second, natural processes that have kept Earth's climate within life-supporting limits for hundreds of millions of years will lose their function once humans take control, making climate entirely dependent on technological civilization, which will inevitably break down someday, causing climate catastrophe. These natural feedback mechanisms, like carbon cycles and ocean circulation patterns, have evolved over millions of years to maintain stability. Once disrupted by large-scale human intervention, these systems may never recover their self-regulating capacity. Third, once climate becomes managed, maintaining technological systems becomes essential for survival, making the system virtually immune to challenge or revolution. This creates what Kaczynski calls a technological straitjacket. Society becomes locked into maintaining increasingly complex systems because failure would mean catastrophe. The author notes that while elites fear nuclear war, they would welcome climate management as it secures their power by making the system indispensable. This power dynamic would fundamentally alter the relationship between humanity and technology, eliminating any possibility of choosing simpler ways of life. What makes this warning particularly powerful is how it connects to the book's earlier arguments about complexity and unpredictability. Geoengineering represents the ultimate expression of technological hubris, the belief that we can control systems we fundamentally don't understand. The Earth's climate involves countless interconnected variables, feedback loops, and mechanisms that we're only beginning to comprehend. The consequences of this hubris may not be immediate, but they will be devastating when they arrive. Historical examples of failed environmental engineering projects, from introduced species to river diversions, demonstrate how even small-scale interventions can have cascading negative effects that persist for generations. The ultimate irony is that geoengineering, often proposed as a solution to environmental problems caused by technology, would likely create an even more precarious technological dependency. This represents what Kaczynski sees as the terminal stage of technological society, where maintaining complex systems becomes necessary for basic survival, permanently trapping humanity in an artificial and unstable existence. What makes this warning particularly powerful is how it connects to the book's earlier arguments about complexity and unpredictability. Geoengineering represents the ultimate expression of technological hubris, the belief that we can control systems we fundamentally don't understand. The Earth's climate involves countless interconnected variables, feedback loops, and mechanisms that we're only beginning to comprehend. The consequences of this hubris may not be immediate, but they will be devastating when they arrive. Historical examples of failed environmental engineering projects, from introduced species to river diversions, demonstrate how even small-scale interventions can have cascading negative effects that persist for generations. The ultimate irony is that geoengineering, often proposed as a solution to environmental problems caused by technology, would likely create an even more precarious technological dependency. This represents what Kaczynski sees as the terminal stage of technological society, where maintaining complex systems becomes necessary for basic survival, permanently trapping humanity in an artificial and unstable existence. Kaczynski's analysis presents us with an uncomfortable choice. Either accept that our technological civilization is on a path to self-destruction, or commit to radical action to fundamentally transform our relationship with technology. There is no middle path of reformed or sustainable technological society in his view. The competitive dynamics of self-propagating systems make such compromises impossible. This binary choice stems from his observation that technological advancement inherently creates cascading effects that escape human control, regardless of our intentions or safeguards. What makes this perspective so challenging is not just its radical nature, but the logical consistency of its argument. If we accept that complex technological systems are fundamentally unpredictable, that natural selection favors short-term advantage over long-term sustainability, and that technology continuously creates new and unforeseen risks, then the conclusion that technological society will eventually destroy itself becomes difficult to refute. Consider the examples of artificial intelligence, genetic engineering, and nuclear technology, each promising tremendous benefits while simultaneously introducing existential risks that we struggle to fully comprehend or contain. The self-reinforcing nature of technological progress further compounds this problem. Each advancement creates new possibilities and dependencies that make reversal increasingly difficult. Social media's transformation of human communication, automation's reshaping of labor markets and surveillance technology's impact on privacy demonstrate how technological systems become deeply embedded in social structures, making their elimination nearly impossible without radical societal change. Whether one ultimately agrees with Kaczynski's prescription, the complete dismantling of technological society, his diagnosis of our civilization's fundamental contradictions demands serious consideration. In a world of accelerating technological change, increasing environmental degradation, and growing social instability, his warning that we cannot control the forces we have unleashed may prove to be the most important message of our time. The rising concerns about climate change, artificial intelligence safety, and the erosion of human agency in an increasingly automated world lend credence to his core argument about the inherent dangers of unchecked technological progress. This analysis forces us to confront uncomfortable questions about the nature of progress itself. Can technological advancement truly be controlled or directed toward purely beneficial ends? Is the complexity of our modern systems already beyond our ability to manage effectively? The answers to these questions may determine not just the future of human civilization, but potentially its survival.